Well, let's just roll the intro thing because we'll get to that. We'll go deeper into that Central Africa point.
Hit
But
it.
anyway. So, hey everyone, happy Friday. I'm joined with the one and only Brian Harrington, or Brain Harrington, depends on if he's on Twitter or not. How's it going, man?
What's up, man? Happy Friday. Happy Friday.
Yeah, so we were kind of chatting in the pre-show thing about some interesting stuff about the Central Africa stuff. But before we get going, first off, there's someone in the Odyssey live chat says, "Hey, no sound on Odyssey? If you're watching on Odyssey, please let me know if you can hear anything. It could just be someone when they're crappy, you know, could be Rebel Coders." Crappy audio or something. I'm not, I hope it's that. So it's that it. But anyway, real quick, if you're not subscribed yet, please do and hit a like, bump it up in the stuff. Cointr.ee/thedesertlinks. You can leave a live crypto super chat. Eventually, I'll streamline that, but it is what it is. And by the way, my Bitcoin address does go straight to my Lightning wallet. So just in case you didn't know that. So that being said, the story number one. Let me just give the brief outline. Basically, you know, obviously El Salvador was the big country that declared Bitcoin as legal tender. And then since then, the Central African Republic, this is just this week, also followed in its footsteps. And then Panama passed a crypto legislation bill that they were, you know, mulling on for a while. It's not a legal tender law, but it basically deregulates or, you know, gives permission or integrates crypto much more broadly in a bunch of different ways. So you were talking about in the pre-show about the Central African Republic and how they've been basically debating this Bitcoin law for a very long time. And it just now all of a sudden, whoa, it happened. And then crypto people are like, wow, I didn't even know this happened. And then it kind of shows like the disparity of information there.
And like the president of the country isn't even verified on Twitter. And so no, it's exciting. It's exciting. Like we need to bring him on, like in onto the public stage because he deserves to be there. And yeah, it just shows the other thing I was mentioning was just the Bitcoiner who was quoted in the Reuters article and who works on an exchange in Africa. Like I wasn't following him on Twitter. I didn't know about, you know, the work he was doing. And so it's just cool that yeah, there's Bitcoiners that like it's not it just shows how big like the culture is. Like it can Bitcoin can feel like a small subculture, but I do think that is expanding to where you don't even really know, you know, what's happening in other places.
Yeah, it's started to become big where I remember when I was writing for Cointelegraph in 2017, no, 2016. I remember that, you know, I would write about like Bitcoin and mostly Bitcoin, but other crypto stuff too. And then there were slow news days and weeks where I would have to write about dip into decentralized privacy tech type stuff too, or that I would basically just say such and such headline, but Bitcoin would make this better. You know, like I have to like do that, like just do an unrelated thing, like inflation's here. This is how Bitcoin could help, kind of thing. Or like, you know, Alan Greenspan says that we should go back to the gold standard now. It's like, wow, that's crazy. But you know, it'd be better than gold. Like you had to kind of do that, but now it's just there's too much news to keep up with. One thing I should point out with this legal tender kind of thing, El Salvador. And the Central African Republic is in the bottom five for per capita GDP. Only like the very bottom is Burundi, I think. But so that's like the per capita GDP of the Central African Republic is about $450 a year,
Dang.
which it's that's really not very happy for them. Obviously, you know, it's probably a very agrarian rural society as well, which affects a lot of that stuff. But also, we're talking of what could be, you know, without being insensitive, could definitely be described as a very poor country. And El Salvador is like, and so Central African Republic is somewhere around like 190 or 200. It's like 200 and something out of like 212. And El Salvador is like 130 or 140, somewhere. It's not like that, but it's still not a very well-off country financially. And so you have these places, like, I think that it's, there's a reason why no one heard about it, because they kind of, you know, the rest of the world probably doesn't really notice that that country even exists, which has something to do with, you know, people being myopic and just sticking in their own bubbles, but also the economic impact of something like this. Like, if a single, let's just say Mississippi, if Mississippi adopted Bitcoin for legal tender in just one of its towns, like one or one of its cities, that could have a similar economic impact to the Central African Republic doing it. I have to actually crunch those numbers to be sure, but like, but there's a reason why no one's heard about that. And it's also a reason why the, you know, Panama didn't do a legal tender law, but still Panama also is not a super well off country, but it's not, we're getting somewhere with Panama though. It's still, but it's still like, these are the people that kind of have nothing to lose. And they're like, well, our money is so screwed up. We always want to do better, but we're not rich. And other than some small technical expertise, like, this is, we can just bootstrap a financial system that's possibly the same or better than a first world system. We can just bootstrap it for free. Yep. And then they kind of do that. But also, it's like 11% of the Central African Republic has internet. And so it's like, it's almost like, let's just get some investment in our poor, struggling country at this point.
And I don't understand, like, and that's what the mainstream media pieces were missing, when they were all of the negativity of, well, the internet adoption's only at this, well, the just there's so much other more basic stuff that needs to happen first. And it's like, look, maybe the way that the world has been doing, like, philanthropy and, like, economic systems building for the past, you know, decades, maybe there's a problem with that if the internet adoption rate in this country is still only 11%, okay? So to throw snide remarks at, like, the new, you know, technology on the block of, oh, what is this going to do about this, while other technologies have had decades and decades to, like, make this better, it doesn't make any sense and is just super dishonest. Like, if you're in, you're right. Like, the, what's amazing, like, in college, I took this class about, like, microloans, microloans to, like, developing countries. And you do. So what you just said of the per capita GDP per person, do I have $500 that I can invest into something? Yeah, I do. Like, if now I can peruse the entire world and find that, like, you know how far a $500 investment would, like, go in a place like that compared to, you know, my other menu of options? And, like, that's what Bitcoin's doing. Like, if my $500 allowed someone to, like, literally start a business of, I don't know, how about installing, like, more internet in the country? Like, that we could start a new internet company literally from scratch. And that, so you're just, you're starting from such a low starting point that everything is going to feel rapid.
Yeah. I think it's like a bootstrap of adoption to a certain extent when you have the government say, you got to take this kind of thing. Because one of the biggest barriers in adoption in a lot of these countries, like, for example, Venezuela, is like, what can I do with it? And so Venezuela is in a very extreme case of a relatively well-to-do country that was pretty technologically literate and then just had this horrendous currency crisis to where, you know, people got a lot of crypto and then they had to figure out how to use it. But, like, most of these cases, no, like, if you give a goat herder, like, a, you know, a million satoshis or something like that or whatever, I don't even know he's going to know what to do with it. But if it's legal tender, then that, like, means something, and you can kind of bootstrap past
the thing,
you know?
And I agree that legal tender means something. I actually didn't know, and I don't know, I feel like people are saying this, the whole, like, if it's legal tender, entrepreneurs are forced to accept it. Like, I'm not sure that is what that means. Like, an entrepreneur can still, you can't force anyone to do, if someone says, hey, like, you know what I mean? Like, places have up the sign that says, we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone. Like, no, I'm an independent person and can produce value whenever I want. If like, even if this is like the legal tender, I can still just choose not to work that day. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, the whole like coercion thing, I just don't, it feels like super splitting hairs to me.
Yeah, it's a funky situation because first off, we live, it's kind of funny because when you have government and laws involved, you have a lot of force and coercion involved, but also you have a lot of pretense and a lot of reality that doesn't align with that. And so, mm-hmm. for example, in the U.S., the U.S. dollar is legal tender and nothing else is, which means that you have to, by law, accept dollars if for payment and that the government will accept that. Now, that's like the law. Now, how many people out there, like how many businesses or whatever will take, I mean, no place in the U.S. really takes like pesos or some foreign currency, mm-hmm. as far as I know. Well, right. A few do actually on the border town I grew up near in Arizona. You yep. could go to the McDonald's and pay with pesos and stuff sometimes because, you know, it's like, it's a border community. They'd upcharge you a little bit. Who cares? But like yep. other than that, like anyone taking crypto, I guess is kind of breaking the law in a certain way. But like no one is afraid of that. It's just like, oh, I received an asset. I received it as long as they get their capital gains. Okay. No business is actually terrified about breaking the law with taking crypto. And it's kind of this weird thing where, you know, it's legal tender but kind of, you can sort of do what you want. And it's the same thing, kind of thing in El Salvador. I was chatting with my buddy Lorenzo who lives there. And he just says, like, first off, there's loopholes in the law that if you don't have the ability to accept this, you don't have to, like, you don't have the technical ability or training. You don't have to. But also, it's like 90% of the country, that's actually a story further down, but like the vast majority of the businesses in El Salvador, from what a lot of people on both sides have told me, don't accept Bitcoin right now. Mm-hmm. So, but they're not living in fear of their lives either. So it's this weird gray area where the government says, by decree, this is money and everyone has to take it and all this kind of stuff. But then like if it doesn't, there's kind of this wink, wink, nudge thingy, but at least it does kind of, what it does do is it does give a safety aspect to it, right? Where if you add something as legal tender, it makes it so it's safe to transact in that at least. Whereas before, like there's always the business being like, I don't know if I can pay the things that really matter with this. Maybe I won't.
Yeah. I think it's definitely more of a like market. I think it's way more of a marketing thing. Like even if you Google, so I just Googled legal tender right now and conflicting things come up. Like Oxford Dictionary says same thing. Coins or banknotes must be accepted if offered in payment of a, in payment of a debt. No, so actually it does say in payment of a debt. And then same thing, Wikipedia says legal tender is a form of money that courts or law are required to recognize as satisfactory payment for any monetary debt. And so that was always my understanding of it also. It's like, okay, so it's for payment of a debt, but then that's when you super like splice that down. And it's like, if I'm just an entrepreneur selling goods and services, like I'm not required to take that. So
yeah, maybe. Yeah. And it's like,
but that's why I, in my opinion, the legal tender thing is a little bit like splitting hairs, because I saw people mm-hmm. tweeting out like, hey, no cap gains tax is like more important than legal tender, but legal tender means no cap gains tax. Like, so it's like, I'm down for either of those. I don't think that opinion is that like bad. And I tweeted this out. Like, I agree. Like maybe the Panama way of saying it is slightly better, but mm-hmm. I definitely like seeing like Bitcoin listed as the actual currency. Like when you go to Central Africa Republic Wikipedia page, and when you go to El Salvador's Wikipedia page, like I think that, It's like the bully pulpit of that. Like it is an endorsement. Like it is an endorsement of like, this is money.
Yeah, we're seeing, I think, it's kind of a holdout to the antiquated idea of what the hell is even legal tender. It's just like money is whatever people will trade, but then eventually it's like, well, people kind of focus in on gold and silver, and then they make like banknotes that have that, and then it's like the antiquated time of like, we must all be forced to do this. You got to turn in your gold, whatever. That whole thing is not a 10, 20 years from now reality. It's kind of like saying you can use whatever money you want in a like 1970s kind of a language is kind of what the legal tender laws. And so I guess like the concern is always if people get into legal trouble, if they don't want to use this kind of stuff. But it, so far, it doesn't seem like any of the countries adopting legal tender laws for Bitcoin seem to have any kind of interest in like forcing people to use or punishing people who don't. You know, so it's kind of weird. But that's the problem with the government, though, right? That's why government sucks, is because they can come out with some like great idea, but it could always be used by the next guy to like punish political opponents. Like if there's a business or opponent or whatever, and you just want to like shake everyone down, you can just say like you have 30 days to accept Bitcoin in your little taco stand, otherwise you're going to jail. And then they all freak out and then they start using, you know, let's just say like the Chivo wallet or whatever, which let's say the politician has like a significant investment stake in it, and then he probably, there's always like with government, there's always this room for like nonsense. But as far as like the Central African Republic is concerned, first off, so reminding people the country exists, that's always a good start. And also it's more of a, it allows people to come in and like do things where they otherwise would have been scared to be like, the local goons are gonna crack down on me. Of course they still can. Of course it's probably still a corrupt country. Again, I'm making assumptions here. It's probably still a corrupt country. There's probably still a lot of nonsense. But if you're coming in just by the fact that it's legal tender, if you're coming in and starting a Bitcoin business, the likelihood of the government giving you trouble for it for non for different reasons is also lower, since they're signaling we want more of this in the country.
And look, and here's the answer to the whole when people, so naysayers were saying that too, like, well, there's still corruption, there's still, how's this helping anyone? You know, then you just start really checking down the boxes of like the actual properties of Bitcoin that make it good. And it's like, if Bitcoin in all circumstances is harder to seize than other forms of money, that's true. So if that helps you, you know, can, like have any sort of savings when previously you haven't been able to, that is the number one way to like start empowering a community.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so Panama, as far as I know, has been always just a bit more of a freewheeling, like they're kind of, you know, more of like a tax haven slash the like investment haven. So it's, that's why also their law is a little bit different. I did cover this when I covered the original El Salvador law, like whenever that happened, many, many months ago. They're talking about like DAOs and stuff like that, decentralized governance and all that kind of stuff, like bringing that on board. So they're clearly like trying to rush into modernity as quickly as they can. But we'll see how it goes. All I know is some people, like I know like Randy Hilarski, who's been in the crypto community for a long time, it's like, oh, Panama's great, I love living in Panama. And then it's like last couple of years I'm like, oh, I'm under curfew, I can't leave my house, screw this place, I'm leaving. He leaves. And so that's
Dang.
my thought. That's unfortunately one of my thoughts
Yeah.
on Panama. It's like great in a lot of ways, but it's still not like a free country, you know?
No, for sure. And but one thing that was interesting that kind of hit me last night when we were talking about it at our meetup is of the three now, though, of El Salvador, Central African Republic, and Panama, like from a branding perspective, I don't super know this, but I feel like Panama is probably seen as like the quote unquote nicest, like of those three.
Yeah, for
As far
sure.
as like you're correct, it, like it already had a little bit of an expat, like branding safe haven element to it. And so, yeah.
Yeah. So this is another story here. One fifth of businesses in El Salvador now accept Bitcoin, according to the NBER study. So the National Bureau of Economic Research shows that about 20% have started to accept Bitcoin. Blah blah blah, surveying stuff. I think that's a very hard number to verify, but it is like that sounds about right from what I've heard. Like people say, like all the big box stores, all like the foreign stores, everything. You know, all those take it, and then not a lot of like the side street taco shop kind of places. But like 20% is enough to where you could probably live on it, you know? Like you might not be able to go everywhere, but you can go enough to where, you know, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, and I would say also, look, if the give the whole study like a plus or minus 5%, and we'll even just grade it really harshly and call it 15%, like that's still pretty really, really good for 1 year, I would say. Like that's really good.
Yeah. And so what I'm wondering, like, honestly, like, this is maybe a little bit of skepticism as well. Like, I wonder about that, because I think accepting any major cryptocurrency is a plus, especially if you have a crappy, like, government currency that you're using, right? What I wonder is if the payment apps are up to speed or what that will kind of look like, because we could see, I mean, I guess the hope is that we see in a year be like 30% or more, and it keeps like going up. I wonder if it'll be like in 5 years, it's like, well, the big touristy places take it, but no one else take, like, people that started to take it now don't, because the apps didn't come up, or the internet infrastructure couldn't keep up with that or something. Yep. That would be fun to see. What I really want to see is like what this is like in the Central African Republic, because in a year, like, is it going to have like a, all of a sudden everyone has a mobile phone, everyone can do this, like, or is it going to be, you know, a year in, it's like you have like a couple of mining businesses, and then you have like a few big box stores or whatever that take it, and then everything else is like not.
Right. Well, so, and what that's highlighting already, and I was meant to say this earlier, here's the one thing the mainstream media pieces did do really well. I loved every article that talked about Central African Republic also talked about El Salvador almost fully. So everyone parroted the, like, hey, second country to do it, second country to do it, second country to do it. That is for sure the most powerful, like, thing of this. And the other reason why it's powerful is exactly what you were just doing of comparing, okay, now I have a year's worth of data in El Salvador. Now, yeah, what is a year's worth of data at, like, Central Africa Republic going to do? Because the other way, going country by country, is one ratio to check. The other thing coming out of El Salvador that I think is going to be really interesting is, like, if McDonald's or Starbucks or Taco Bell or any of these big box stores, if they release any sort of numbers on, hey, our El Salvador stores used to be doing this and now they're doing this, and that's justifying any sort of McDonald's rollout in any other country, that is going to be really, really powerful, like, also. So it's like you have the country by country metrics that are going to start spreading. And then you also have the, like, Fortune 500 by Fortune 500 companies. Because as soon as McDonald's gives any sort of sign of, like, hey, we're increasing our rollout to XYZ other stores in XYZ other areas, then all of Wendy's, all of Burger King, all of the other, like, comparable stores are going to have the pressure put on them.
Yeah, that's really the the thing beneath everything. It's not mom and pop stuff. It's basically, once you start having, I mean, I don't know if there's even a McDonald's in the Central African Republic. I guess I'd have to look for it. But once you start having enough countries say you got to do this, and then the megacorps, they're going to have to get an implementation of something online. Because eventually, and then you're going to have this, like, the global world, as it were.
Yep.
Is going to have to, like, switch gears on to crypto. Yes. It's kind of funny. Yes. Like,
because then that's the IT people, the, like, IT people inside each Fortune 500 company is going to pull up to the repos and say, what is going on here? And that's just going to produce, like, so many more, like, eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's something that's kind of interesting. So as far as identities and things like that are so fascinating to me, like tribes, because like, especially in this one thing that's been very fascinating about Africa in general to me is just how many, like, you know, you talk about, like, there's ethnic conflict, like, oh, why are they just killing themselves, or, like, all that kind of stuff that people in other countries don't really understand. And it's like, well, people have been, like, the national borders have been drawn up artificially by outside group for the most part on 90% of cases in Africa today, I believe. And then there's a lot of, like, longstanding socio-political conflicts that just kind of aren't respected by those borders. But it kind of makes you think about, like, identity. Like, for example, I would say that my strongest identity right now is, it's kind of like a toss up between, an American and a citizen of New Hampshire. Because, you know, as a free stater and all that stuff, it's a very strong thing. But, like, in the past, like, there was a time when most of the years in my life were spent living in Mexico. And I am a Mexican citizen as well. So I'd be kind of, like, Mexican-American, but then I lived in Europe for a while, and I've noticed that there's a tribe of people I call international people who speak a few different languages and travel and just they don't really have like an ethnic identity or like a cultural identity. And it's kind of this, it's a different class that kind of, it's not just a lack of pinpointing to that. It's also like, it's its own identity. It's like, what, like, where are you from? I'm an international person. It's like, oh, I get what that means. I get like the, like, everyone speaks like perfect English, but with a slight, like, sounds like they're not from around here kind of thing. It's like the international accent because it just, everyone understands it. It's like, it's, so I'm seeing this kind of thing with, like, the crypto thing, like how many Salvadorans who use crypto are like have roots in the country? Probably probably the minority of crypto users in El Salvador are like ground up Salvadorans, so to speak. And so, like, for example, my buddy Lorenzo is from Venezuela and he says it's very similar to Venezuela, but, you know, he can't be in the country for whatever reason. So I have a feeling that there's a lot of people, like, didn't Max Kaiser move there or something?
Yep.
And I'm sure there's a few other big names of people that are like expats. Yep. But then it's like, what about those people going? I mean, I think that El Salvador is probably a way nicer place than Central African Republic at this point, as far as like being able to live there, being an expat.
Right.
But eventually you're going to have these networks of these crypto havens.
Yep.
I mean, crypto is a very strong identifier for a lot of people. I mean, like laser eyes and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But like, I think that in the future, not too distant future, like the digital, I hate to use the word digital nomad because it always sounds some, like, you know, trust fund grifter who's just trying to, you know, whatever.
Yep.
It always sounds a little bit like that. But like, there's going to be a collection of people like that that are just, they bounce in these crypto enclaves.
Yep.
Around, and they have like kinship with that, and it's almost like the people who live there, it's like the townies versus the other people. Like, for example, when I was getting my master's in the UK, it was in the town of Buckingham, and the uni people, like 80% of the people were from outside of the UK, and I think like 40% of them were from Africa even. And then there's the uni, and there's the uni bars and all that stuff, but then you got like a block this way, and now you're in the townie bars, where if you don't look like a white Englishman, people stare at you and stuff.
Yep.
And so I don't like the class separation kind of thing there, but I do think we're starting to see that, like, every major city I've been to in, you know, the modern age, you know, looks kind of the same. Like, you can kind of like get the same coffee you get everywhere. Like, but then there's like the under thing. So I think that this is going to kind of the crypto legal tender thing is going to kind of reinforce this, instead of like country by country separation. It's kind of like network, other network.
Definitely. Like, so
delineation.
I have a ton of thoughts on this. Like, I actually made a video for my YouTube channel about,
let's
like
extend this another 3 hours.
Well, so I actually, my hard stop, actually, I don't have a hard stop anymore, but we can, so you direct it any way you want, but
yeah, I got a hard stop in like 20 minutes, but that's fine.
Perfect. I made a video about like being a home ownership versus like nomadism, and talked about how there's actually like, I think there can be a really strong like cohesion to both of them. Like, when I think about foreign investment, when I think about these Bitcoin like havens and these Bitcoin places, I'm not necessarily, my brain doesn't immediately go to like convincing my wife and convincing my family that like we should move there and like reorienting my whole work schedule and a lot of stuff. But it definitely does go to like, hey, if I'm considering like an Airbnb as an investment anyways, what is the difference between, you know, buying one, you know, 5 hours away in a vacation spot, you know, here in America versus buying one somewhere else and potentially getting paid in Bitcoin and potentially like being, you know, adding to the outside investment of like helping an area or whatever. So that, I think there is a very, but at the same time, I'm also very much a fan of like, when we talk about this, like Bitcoin being local and like being able to empower communities and like really knowing the people where you like live and showing how that can like benefit people. So I think, I have a lot of thoughts about that, but I definitely think that is going to happen. Like how you're saying, and it's going to be, then it's going to be on, it's the responsibility then falls to the like locals to like really harness that power, like loving where you live and harness that power and harness that excitement. Like there needs to be, like I was just at the Kansas City Bitcoin meetup and one of the guys there, like he is a Missouri maximalist. Like he will tell you why Missouri is like the best state
a Missouri
like,
maximalist?
In the country. Like, and that's okay. A lot of like what New Hampshire like is all about too. Yeah. And so I love, I don't know. I just love people that like love where they're from and like have the ability to be really like explain why Bitcoin is good for their local community. And you could see it across these articles. Like the one guy in Panama, you know, like is making TikTok videos of like why like this is good for Panama.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of, there's kind of two ways to go that. Well, let me just really quickly say the possible negative thing of this or like unplanned is I remember in the days, like I wanted Bitcoin when I heard about it as digital gold. I wanted it as something that's like, cause I wanted to live on gold, but then it's like, oh, this is like, I can do this instead. I didn't want government currency. That's kind of it's gotten way deeper and much more complicated than that, but that's still kind of where I'm at. But a lot of us as early Bitcoiners and then as current Bitcoiners and as people in other communities, like the Nano community is big into this, obviously the Dash One, Bitcoin Cash, a bunch of these, there's a lot of this like humanitarian element of like, oh, let's, you know, cheap remittances for the poor people in these countries and all this kind of stuff. But I hate to say, it looks like it's going in the opposite direction almost, that it seems like crypto is, and I'm not going to be absolute in this. It seems like crypto is almost going in this intelligentsia kind of direction where it's benefiting the smart people. It's benefiting the people with resources. And then like the poor nobodies, you know, I'm not saying this in any judgmental way at all, but like the average the people, right? The average person is kind of being separated from all this. And like, on the one hand, I don't think that's a good thing to a certain extent. But on the other hand, I think that it's kind of a necessity that you start with the people with the mentally rich first. And it's one of those sad things that like I want to help everyone. I want everyone to be better off. And I do think that if everyone uses crypto, everyone, including the late adopters, will be better off, of course.
Yep.
At the same time, I kind of wish like it's always like the smart people that get out of there first. And it's a lot of times the smart people are the people who currently have the fiat wealth. But then it's not always the case. I mean, I sure as hell don't have any fiat, never had any fiat wealth.
Yeah. I think, so this is something that should be covered a lot and should be talked about a lot. I think that, you can go the route of like, because like there's the Cantillon effect and like crony capitalism, like people closest to the new money supply of like rigging the whole game across the entire world, like Bitcoin plugs the actual hole in the bottom of that whole chain. So like, even if there is going to be rich people and there is going to be poor people, but like the poor people still are not having their like wealth siphoned off by inflation. Like, or so that's like one aspect of it, but that's such a long-term aspect of it that like, I think the nature of like what the show is about today of like El Salvador saying like Bitcoin, like we welcome Bitcoin, and the Central African Republic saying we welcome Bitcoin, and Panama saying we welcome Bitcoin. Like that is the lower end like countries like in this world. Like, and so even if it's like, oh, well, this is only going to benefit the 11% of people in Central Africa Republic that have the internet. And so it's still just creating classism inside Central Africa. Like, okay, what about that one person who lives right on the border town between the 11% and between the rural or whatever, that then they're able to have a savings account for the first time? What about that? Yeah. What about those people that the internet adoption goes from 11% to 15% inside the first year because like some entrepreneurs that were like working for someone else were able to have a savings account for the first time and then actually do something entrepreneurially? Like, what about that? You know, and it's because I've even heard like, oh, well, the people that are landowners in El Zante are, you know, are they already were just the investors from San Salvador anyways. Like, so how is this still helping the people? Like, like, I shouldn't take this story from him. Like, you should have Mike Peterson on, like, himself and talk to him about Bitcoin Beach, because he'll come and talk to you. But yeah, I heard him talk the other day at a meetup, and he said a really powerful story that there was a family inside El Salvador that their business started taking Bitcoin, and they had been receiving, like, remittances from their family in the U.S., And it would always bi-directional, like, or single directional, right? U.S. and El Salvador. El Salvador introduces Bitcoin. The family in the U.S. had a medical emergency, and the family in El Salvador was able to send savings back to the U.S. Like, explain how that happens without Bitcoin. Like, that's explain crazy. How that actually, like, helps people. And so I'm as tired as everyone, like, about the whole, like, Bitcoin is superior savings technology. Like, I get it, and we repeat it to death, but, like, it is true. And so having these people that have anyone anywhere in the world, it doesn't matter. I don't care if you're, like, living paycheck to paycheck here in America, like, you have the opportunity to have a Bitcoin exchange and put a dollar a week into Bitcoin. Like, you have the ability to do that. And so, yeah, like, it's like, we're so close to it that we can like very split hairs and think about this, but like, there still is no asymmetric upside available to disenfranchised people, like, in this world than better money.
Yeah. Before I get to this super chat thing, I'm just going to hit on what it's a lot of corollaries to the American dream, which is kind of interesting. Like, the 10 to 20% in El Salvador, let's just say it's 20% of merchants, 10% of users, which is way generous. It's far below that at this point, but it will eventually. It's kind of like the American dream. So the people who got out of their countries and came to the U.S. historically did really well, right? They were the minority of their countrymen. They did really well. But it's also funny that a lot of times, like, all of us have immigrant roots, basically. And if I look back at, like, my, you know, Italian and Scottish ancestors, they were not exactly, you know, they weren't sending their brightest, as Trump would say, right? It was like, it's a lot of people who are, like, down on their luck people, but had that little spark, that entrepreneurial spark that caused them to come over and make something good. And I think it's kind of the same thing without geographical relocation, where it is going to be the minority of people that benefit the most from this, as always. However, it's not necessarily going to be the people who are at the top of the stacks, you know, where they're at. It could just be, like, the people that are got that hustle to them in a certain way. And so we do end up creating a new, you know, upper class in a certain way, but, like, from nobody's in a
definitely
lot of
yes it's a shakeup. It's like, it's a randomly selected shakeup, or you could find the correlations and find out who's being chosen, quote unquote, or whatever, but, like, it's a more randomly chosen shakeup compared to any other options currently in the world.
It's kind of funny, like, anyone can kind of be whoever they want to be in, like, it's like, in America, you come to America, you can be anybody. And it's like, that's kind of like vintage. That's, I mean, there is an element to that still alive today, but it's more like a vintage reference. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, like, anyone can just join crypto and, like, be who they want to be. And it's, you know, it's like the next, it's the next, you know, crypto is the next America, which is, I'm going to write an op-ed at some point. Hopefully I'll get Cointelegraph to publish it, but it would be nice. The crypto is the next America.
Yeah.
I have a couple of super chats real quick. So first off,
hit him.
It says anonymous here, but it came from Nudge. Where in Europe did you live? How long? Well, I lived in France. It was going back to, like, 2004 or so. I lived in France for, like, 6 months and became fluent. And then since I haven't practiced enough, so I'm not quite there anymore. And I went to grad school in the University of Buckingham in the UK. And then I just traveled, like, you know, Austria, did some stuff in Switzerland, Germany. Spent a few weeks in Romania when they were right cutting the three, like, 50s off of their currency, like, right at the same time. That was kind of crazy. But yeah, to answer that, let me refresh this. I have to refresh this thing manually because of stuff. But I got another one that says, what do you say here? Do you think we'll be able to bypass centralized services like Visa, MasterCards, and use crypto directly? All merchants need is a cheap Android tablet to start accepting crypto. Thanks for your hard work. Yeah, so obviously the answer is yes. The thing is, the devil's in the details of, like, I think any business. So, for example, you can get a cheap phone, like, you know, little thing, for very cheap. And I've seen people gift them, and you can download a point of sale system. I think AnyPay is the best one right now, but CTX is a good one coming up too. And there's a few others, whatever. I'll have to do a video with more details, but you can do that pretty easily. The challenge with the merchants is the accounting. And the dream is, if you put this in Square or Clover or Cake or any of those other big point of sale things, then it's like, you just, how do you not take it? The problem is right now, like, for example, let me give an example from my local French bakery that takes crypto. So they exit out of their point of sale app, they open up AnyPay, they take the payment, and then they log it as an other payment or whatever. But they have to bounce between two apps. It's not that hard, but it's like they have to want to. So yep. Any merchant in the world can do this. And of course, the thing is, like, the accounting on the business side of, like, how do you deal with that? Usually it's like a small business where the owner just takes the loss, so to speak, and just hoards the crypto, right? That's kind of how it has to end up working today. But yes, we will be able to, we can today if you want to, but you go to sole proprietorships first, I would think. And then if you get like a bigger one, you have to make sure you bring the heat as far as like you bring the customers. And one thing that I'm really like looking forward to, what I like about AnyPay in particular is they accept a few different cryptos. I think right now it's Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin SV, Dash, Dogecoin, Litecoin. And I think Monero, although I was not able to successfully test Monero with them. But the good thing about that is they can present a single QR code that you can scan, and it works for any of those currencies. So you don't have to have the complexity. What would be great, which is what CTX is working on, is a ThorChain backend, so that if you're just a Bitcoin max, you just want Bitcoin, or you're just a new to crypto merchant, and you get sold on taking Bitcoin, but you're like, wow, this guy wants to pay you in the dog coin thing. And you're like, I don't know about, like, you just haven't wrapped your head around it yet, or you just never want to take it. That's another out thing. You can just have it trustlessly turned into Bitcoin in the back end. You just take whatever. We're getting really close to where this is like right now, where it's like, oh yeah, you can use Dash Direct and spend it anywhere, buy gift cards or, you know, the virtual MasterCard, whatever. That's great. You know, that's like, you cannot own fiat today, but like the merchant side of stuff where you start getting the businesses holding crypto, that's like tomorrow. I wouldn't say it's like day after tomorrow, but it's like tomorrow, you know, it's like really, it's like this year and the following, we're really going to get deep into that stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, let me see if there's anything else we were trying to talk about. I mean, obviously here we go. Two more charged with teaching North Koreans to evade U.S. sanctions with crypto. Two EU citizens have been indicted for violating U.S. sanctions on North Korea when they jointly planned a crypto conference there. And there was some U.S. guy who just got a bunch of years in prison for this kind of stuff. Well, let me get your hot take real quick, and then we'll move on with that.
This is the one I know the least amount about. I don't know. Was it a digital conference? Or they're like, you can't. Yeah, I don't know.
I think they did an in-person one. I think they did an in-person one, or at least the one guy did. The funny thing is, in the first story, I think it was like last week, I might have talked about it, with the U.S. guy, he traveled to North Korea and held an in-person conference to show them how to use crypto, probably, and not just how to use crypto, but like how to use it to get around sanctions and stuff. Uh-huh. And I believe the State Department ahead of his trip said, don't do it.
Yeah.
And so I think that, I don't think he did, I personally don't think this individual or any of these did anything wrong. I think, at least in the first case, I think he did something stupid, but yeah. Not wrong necessarily.
I didn't even know you could travel to North Korea. How did he do that?
I don't know. I think that they let There have been some people who've been there. It just really, they do have a tourism industry, oddly enough.
Yeah.
Which, if it wasn't such a dicey situation where you could go to a labor camp there, or if you say the wrong thing, you could go to a labor camp in the U.S. If it wasn't so dicey, I would love to go to North Korea and just, just as we're talking about the whole, like, all these cities are starting to blend together across the world.
Yeah.
It's the one spot in the world where, like, for very tragic reasons, things are very different from the rest of the world. And I kind of like to see that, the museum of communism, you know, in real life, kind of, personally. But anyway.
I think, so then maybe, like...
Which, by the way, the Bitcoin Cash podcast just commented, my mate has been, he had a pretty wild time. I'm like, oh, I bet. I would like to go, yeah.
Wow. Maybe work on some, I guess my thing is maybe work on something like more tangential, like, again, getting free internet access or something. Like, I think something that was something I think a lot about, because I have like family, like on my wife's side that lives in Iran now. I think a lot about like, what can we do from outside the country to just like increase free internet, or like increase VPN access. Like that's where I would
step
focus
one, on. Become Elon Musk.
Yeah. Well, no. And I tweeted that out. I was like, we need satellites shipped to Central Africa. Like let's have Bitcoin trips to Central Africa, installing satellites. Like that sounds really fun.
Yeah. I mean, that is honestly like one of the best things we could do. I think, like, I hate to like pin it on Elon because he's doing so freaking much, right?
Right.
And I don't think he's anything like a god or anything, but I think he's doing a lot of things that humanity is going to be very grateful for in the next 20 years. But like, someone should partner with Starlink or something and just be like, look, if your country will, do crypto of any kind, but, you know, let's just say Bitcoin is legal tender. If you'll do something like that, we will finance this nonprofit or whatever, will finance education, training, buy a bunch of like smart, very cheap smart tablet, like Android tablets and smartphones and stuff to give to consumers and businesses who complete a training thing. And like, they should have a cost too. Like, you should have to pay something, even if it's like a 10th of a percent of the actual cost to provide the service, just to show goodwill of like, I'm investing in my future. I'm trying to do this.
Right.
And then we'll put a Starlink satellite over, giving good internet coverage over this thing. And then there you go. Like, that would be a great way to just bootstrap. I'd love to bootstrap absolutely like rural, nowheresville kind of countries into the digital age. And the thing is, you don't have to worry about like the banking system. Like, that's expensive to bootstrap that. Whereas all you have to do is like, you don't even, like, you have an internet connection and then you're there. Like, you don't have to run a node in your country, even if you don't want to, right?
Yeah. No, dude, correct. And that's how, dude, you should have the people from Galloway on if you haven't had them yet. They talk really well about like community banking and community, like community, for open source community banking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, hit me up in my DMs and stuff. But that's it for this podcast, though, guys. I got to take off. But yeah, thanks very much for being on. You always like spike my like adrenaline levels and stuff, because it's not like, you know, if you're having a shitty day and you're feeling bummed about crypto and like the price went down or something, just chat with Brian for an hour and you're gonna be like, let's fucking go, like, just get the next thing. So where could people find out more about you and what you do and shill everything?
No, I appreciate that, man. Thank you. Everyone, Brain Harrington, Brain like in your head, Harrington, DMs are up on Twitter. Search Brian Harrington on YouTube and subscribe to my channel and subscribe to the Choice App YouTube channel, where we do a podcast over there. I try to talk about Bitcoin and personal finance. And so, yeah, really been enjoying talking to Joel just about like living unbanked and just really making this stuff happen. So always fun. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great one. Dash Podcast is right next, but otherwise I'll see you guys in a week. Happy Friday, happy weekend, and I'll see you guys later. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and donate to support the show by going to my Cointree page. That's cointr.ee/thedesertlinks. And leave a message with your donation. Check out the show's sponsors. Live on Crypto with BitRefill. Buy absolutely anything with crypto with Shop and Bit. Avoid content censorship with Odyssey. Protect your privacy online with NordVPN. Get paid to search with Presearch. All links are in the show notes.